Life without hope. Now that's living hell.
This is what real hope looks like. This is the word that those hopeless people need to hear. This is the word that 3,000 people that try to commit suicide today, the 3,000 that will try to commit tomorrow, 3,000 that will try to commit on Monday, this is the word that they need to hear, is that there is hope.
It's real superpower. It's hope. There's hope. It means hope.
Welcome to Victims and Villains. This is the show where we talk nerd, we talk hope, and we speak nothing else. I am your host, Captain Nostalgia. We are so glad that you guys joined us because it's only a flesh wound. We're talking Mighty Python and the Holy Grail with part one of a two-part crossover with our friends over at For Better or Worse podcast. You guys have heard their promos all month. Hopefully you guys have checked them out by now. But if you guys haven't, please help me in welcoming Jason and Aaron from the For Better or Worse podcast. What's going on, guys?
Hey.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing great. And so, how are you guys?
Doing well. Glad to be on the show finally.
it's been something we've been talking about for a couple of weeks now. So, tell us a little bit about the idea of what For Better or For Worse is about.
All right. Well, For Better or Worse is a movie podcast. It's kind of we try and keep it broad, but it's mostly review movies. But what we'll do is we'll go back and forth as a couple, choosing a movie that the other would not choose to watch themselves, and then the next week they will pick a movie as well, and we just go back and forth torturing each other with each other.
Oh man, so like I remember when my wife and I we first started dating, I'm huge into Batman. And I found out that my wife had never seen any of the Batman movies.
Okay.
And so literally every weekend for counting down to The Dark Knight Rises, it was showing her every single Batman movie that had ever existed.
Oh, I'm sure she loved that.
Oh, she hated it. She loves Batman now.
That was kind of, I've never seen really superhero movies. So Jason kind of did the same thing for me with superhero movies, but mostly Marvel. I don't think I've ever finished a Batman movie.
Yeah, she always nods out.
Sorry. I was gonna ask, like, you know, what is the worst? All right, so like when you guys are picking these movies, like are these films that you guys have already seen together or either individually, or are you guys saying, you know, hey, this has been on my list to watch forever, let's pick this one? You know, how do you guys kind of go about, you know, choosing the films week to week?
It's kind of been both. Some of the movies we've watched a long time ago. Some of the movies I just see on Netflix and I'm like, oh, he would never watch that with me. But now I have an excuse where he has to watch it. So,
yeah.
And I don't know, probably the same.
Yeah, I'd say one of the more recent ones. For me, I normally pick something that I have seen and absolutely love. So I have a lot of something to say about it. One of our more recent episodes, we did The Titan, and that is a movie that we hadn't seen. I hadn't seen at all, but knew she would hate. So we went ahead and watched that for the review of the episode. So
yeah, like when that episode hit Twitter, I was kind of like, I've never heard of this film. And then I saw the little Netflix logo and I was like, oh, that makes sense. Well, I've never heard of it.
Yeah,
a lot of movies that Jason likes, a lot of people haven't heard of.
Yeah,
that's all right, because we need indie sweethearts out there. I mean, they're making big comebacks in conversation nowadays.
Yeah, exactly, for sure.
All right, so Jason, what is the worst film that you've had to watch for this podcast thus far?
It would have to be The Proposal.
Really?
Yeah.
And it's not that bad.
Not The Proposal.
It's not that bad.
No, definitely maybe. That's what it was.
Oh, yeah.
The Proposal I actually really liked. Definitely maybe. For some reason, it was just all over the place and pacing. Do you like that movie?
I'm like in a film group on Facebook, and one of the questions that they asked the other day was, what is a, for all the guys out there, what is one film, like one romantic comedy that you just love? And mine has always been either Definitely Maybe or She's Out of My League.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Actually, I don't think I've seen She's Out of My League.
I don't either.
Yeah. I do not think I've seen that one, but I don't know. I mean, I like Ryan Reynolds. I mean, he's amazing. So the fact that I didn't like that movie surprised me, actually, because I don't have a problem with romantic comedies normally.
They're just not your first choice.
Yeah, I wouldn't choose to watch them. But that one, I don't know. I think it was just that the everything was kind of left up in the air too much. You never knew who you like. I don't know. For me, any of the characters I just couldn't connect with. So might have just been I didn't know who I would want him to be with, because they were all kind of rough. I don't know. But hey, if you like it, there is absolutely fanfare for that movie out there, for sure. So
really, because I don't think that exists. Like I feel like it's like a minority of people that like that film, because it was kind of like during that like weird renaissance where like Ryan Reynolds like wasn't quite loved, but he wasn't quite hated either. So
he was still kind of coming up. Well, I mostly say that because I forget where we were, but we overheard a couple talking about some romantic comedies, and this lady's husband was telling her how awesome Definitely Maybe was as far as a romantic comedy goes. And up until that point, I just assumed it was hated by all, well, or at least disliked by most, I should say. But so you're at least the second flesh and blood person that I have seen that actually liked it. But it's not one of our more popular episodes, though. So that might be saying something, I guess.
I guess like I showed it to my wife when we first started dating, and she liked it. She thought it was a cute movie. Like it's not a movie that I feel like has like a good rewatchability like some of his other films or like some other rom-coms, but it's not like so bad that you can't rewatch it over and over like here and there.
Yeah.
It's definitely not the worst.
No, for sure it's not. I think it's been the worst that we've watched for the show.
In my opinion,
off the top of my head, but it's mostly because you've actually kind of had a pretty good run of picking movies that aren't that bad.
I mean, so, I'm pretty good at picking movies.
Yeah.
My wife likes to think the same thing. All right. So Aaron, what is the worst film that you've had to review for this podcast?
100% Akira.
Oh man. She hated that movie.
That's fair.
Yeah. I understand it. I was going to say it's either Akira or Alien. You were bored out of your mind for both of those.
Yeah.
Alien is such a slow burn, though.
It is. And I don't mind a slow burn. That's part of the reason why I think Alien is one of my favorite sci-fis of all time. Like, it's just so atmospheric. It's fantastic, but she didn't enjoy it.
But like the payoff for that movie, like it really actually does pay off, whereas there's a lot of films that has that slow burn, and I feel like the reason I have like a love-hate relationship is because like slow burns don't actually always work out.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. And yeah. But Alien is a great example of what it, when it's done right, how it really works.
Yeah. And the problem is if you're not into what they're putting down in that slow burn, then the payoff doesn't even matter, which is basically what her problem was. She wasn't interested in the sci-fi like space mining like I am. So
that's all right. I mean, it took me like two or three times to like get into like Stranger Things, because Stranger Things is like that slow burn, and now it's a fantastic show. It's probably one of my favorite shows in the last like 5 years. And, you know, going back to Akira, I can understand that because, you know, not everyone's going to like anime.
Yeah, it's not all anime. Most anime I don't like. There's been like a couple that he's made me watch that aren't so bad, but it's just so crazy.
Yeah, it's a really hard, it's incredibly hard to follow.
Especially just weird.
Yeah. Have you seen Akira at all?
I didn't. I didn't actually know what Akira was until they started talking about the movie last year.
Oh, okay.
So like it's been on my list for like things to check out, but that list just apparently just keeps growing.
Yeah, that's how it works.
You could probably just cross that one off and be fine.
All right, just crossing it off right now. Aaron says so.
It's a benchmark in anime history, though. You have to. Well, I mean, if you're not into anime, you probably won't like it, though.
See, I have this love-hate relationship with anime because, like, I'm a casual fan because I really, really enjoy, like, my favorite anime is Ghost in the Shell. So, like, Ghost in the Shell, to me, is, like, near perfection, like, when it comes to, like, filmmaking and storytelling. And the manga that it expands upon is glorious. But like at the same time, like there's so much content out there nowadays, it's kind of hard to like really be a fan of just one genre.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I like almost anything as long as it's good. You know, like there's a lot of people out there that are just gung-ho anime fans that will just watch anything anime at all. And I am definitely not that person. I do like quality, some thought went into the plot, or, you know, the animation's got to be, you know, fantastic. If the other things fail, the animation's got to be good. I don't know. I guess I'm kind of like a fair weather fan of anime.
No, that's fair.
Everything Studio Ghibli. So...
They put out good content and great things. So for you guys, what is, you know, because the whole concept of this show revolves around forcing each other to watch movies that you normally wouldn't watch. What has been the biggest surprise kind of coming out of this show for you guys and the films that you guys have covered? Jason, what about you, man?
I would have to say that it has allowed me to find the good in movies that I wouldn't have seen otherwise. Because if she's going to force me to watch a movie, I would, you know, tune out. But since we'd have to do it actually for the show, I actually have to pay attention. After paying attention, I have a feeling you're going to say the same thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
After having to pay attention, I realize like, oh, okay. There is some good in here, but I had to do the show in order to like break down that initial barrier. So it's been very interesting.
Aaron.
Yeah, for me, I mean, watching a movie is usually the end of the day. It's kind of just winding down and I don't always pay attention either, whether he picked it or I picked it. It's just kind of, I'm on the phone or, you know, getting up and walking around while it's on. And so doing the podcast has kind of made it to where I'm having to pay attention. So I'm able to actually talk about the movie because Jason would always want to talk after or at some point about a movie. And I'm like, yeah, I don't really care like what it was about. I was just watching it for fun. So I'm kind of getting the content out of it for sure.
That's why my wife, when I walk out of a movie, like I have to talk about it. So yeah. That's why this like podcast has been like a great outlet for me because like my wife and I, we've been married for almost 5 years and we've been doing this I've been doing this podcast for almost 2 years. So like the first like 3 years of our marriage and really first like 4 or 5 years of our relationship, it was always kind of like just like hearing me, but not really making sure if like everything is going in one ear and out the other.
Yeah.
You know, just being a good wife and a good girlfriend, a good fiance, and just
Yep. Uh-huh. We can relate to that.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, there was a long period of time where Aaron would not put up a fight for movies that we would watch. So we went like a couple of years where she would just be okay with watching whatever. And then come to find out, she was just absolutely hating it. She just like hated watching movies with me because she hated everything I picked. And it's like, girl, you got to tell me if I'm like, we're supposed to have fun together. We can't.
Yeah. I mean, we were doing it together. We were watching a movie together. So that was the most important. But yeah, he would want to talk about it. And I just didn't care.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't also paying attention. So that even wanted to talk about it. I couldn't.
Right. That was my wife. Like, I remember like one of our very like first dates was AMC had done this and IMAX. I bought tickets for both of us. And it was all three Dark Knights. Back to back, and
like she, Batman.
Yeah, it led up to the premiere of Dark Knight Rises, and so this was back when midnight showings were still a thing, and I got out of the theater and I was so pumped. Like I loved Dark Knight Rises the first time I saw it. My opinion has since kind of diminished a little bit of it, but I loved it, and like the entire car ride home, I'm just talking about how great it was, and like talking about like the little like details about it. My wife is just like, yeah, totally. And then like come to find out like a year later, she was like, I hate that movie. It's so boring. Like it just drags on forever and ever and ever. And I was like, why did you tell me that you like, why didn't you say that? Like when we walked out, she was like, it just seems so like on cloud nine about this movie that I just had to let you have your moment.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I guess that was probably the nice thing to do, I guess. But yeah. Oh, well. And now I've basically made sure that she knows that that's not helping anybody when she's miserable. So now we at least talk about it. And also now we have the podcast. So there's more of a reason to do it now.
Yeah. And like, that's kind of like the way my wife has been for like the latter part of our marriage has been like, you know, what do you want to watch? I don't care. It's like, I've been like trying to like show my wife like other things that I normally wouldn't watch. So like we sat down last night and watched Marshall, which is a film that neither one of us would normally watch, but like she likes history. I like biopics, and it's an incredible film. If you guys haven't seen it yet.
Okay, no,
it's a powerful film, and like it actually like a lot of like the historical significance of it, like it got us like talking about it after the film. And so like I like moments like that where you can sit down and like conversate about it. And like our movie taste has been like we have like completely different movie tastes. Like I'm into like horror and sci-fi and a lot of like the same thing that you guys are, like the taste that you guys have in your marriage, like it's very much the same in mine. And so it's like we don't want to like torture each other anymore, so like I have my time to watch movies, she has hers, and like we kind of watch movies that like we mutually like at the same time. So it's more open waves of communication now.
Yeah. Okay, I gotcha. Yeah, that will definitely work. That is how I mean, she straight up will not watch anime with me at all. So if I'm watching anything anime, it's got to be on my own time.
That's what my wife is with me in horror. When we first started dating, I showed her Halloween, and it was the first horror movie that she's ever seen. It was the only horror movie that she's ever seen ever since. So now I'm having to stay up a little bit later these upcoming nights to watch all the Halloween movies to prepare for the new one in October. So, you know, challenges.
Yeah, I gotcha. So which Halloween did you have her watch? The remake or the original?
The remake. The Rob Zombie one.
Oh, geez. Yeah. That's a good one. To introduce her to it with,
I was like, it's it's got its moments. Like it's not as bad as I think a lot of people make it out to be. Like I liked exploring kind of the backstory of Michael Myers, but like I understand like why people don't like it, because if you know the backstory, it makes the character less terrifying and stuff like that.
Yeah, I can get that. A lot of people didn't like the new Nightmare on Elm Street. I actually did like it, but I actually haven't seen the Halloween remake, so I don't have an opinion about it. But I also am not really into Halloween either. Me and my brother actually watched like every single Friday the 13th, so I'm not a stranger to slashers, but they're also not my first pick. We just kind of would just get together and drink beer and watch Friday the 13th. So
that's fair. Like Friday, I've seen like almost every major like franchise, but like Friday the 13th is one that I'm slowly starting to dip my feet into now. Like I just saw the first one this past year for the first time. So
I listened to that episode. Yeah, that would be so interesting to experience it for the first time this far along. It's just permeated everybody's, like, it's such an amazing horror franchise. Even if you don't like it, you know what it's done to horror. But that's like with Erin. She finally just watched Back to the Future.
Yeah.
So it was very strange getting her opinion about a movie, having seen it for the first time, when I can't even remember a time that I didn't know Back to the Future.
Oh, you know,
I've always known it.
Yeah. It's like when my wife and I, when we first started dating, like my wife had never seen Gremlins before, as I'm wearing a Gremlin shirt. And I was like, I need to show you this. Like I growing up, I don't remember a time where I didn't know who Gizmo was or who Stripe was, like, or, you know, these creatures, like these rules, like, it was just part of my childhood, like so ingrained into my life.
Yeah. Yeah. I get that. You haven't seen Gremlins?
No.
Okay. Well, that's going to be on a future show.
I mean, I know what it is. I see his shirt. I've seen it before, but I just haven't seen the movie.
How much do you know about it?
I know there's gremlins in it.
Do you know the rules though?
I know nothing.
Okay. All right. So maybe this is like a Victims and Villains exclusive. You guys go subscribe to their channel and hopefully a future Gremlins episode will pop up.
Yeah, that's definitely going to be on the list now.
But it's only going to pop up if the episode is fed after midnight. Just saying. All right. So what we wanted to do for this episode is we wanted to kind of take the dynamic that Jason and Erin set up for better or worse. And my wife picked the subject matter for this episode. And so where I was kind of expecting something like Lord of the Rings or Harry Potter, which my wife is insanely crazy for those franchises, she's also in love with British humor, then I despise it. So Mighty Python and the Holy Grail was chosen, and a lot of people on like Facebook and Instagram and Twitter really excited about this episode. So I'm just going to say I didn't like this film the first time I saw it, but I have more respect for it now.
Grown
watching it as a podcaster. I wouldn't say it's grown on me, but like there are aspects of this film like that I respect more. But I'll talk about that kind of here in a few minutes. But Jason, since I started with you last time, I'll start with Erin this time. What are your thoughts on Mighty Python and the Holy Grail?
All right. I think this was the second time that I've seen it, and maybe the third. But it's honestly, it's not my favorite. I think it's funny the first time, and then every time after that, it's kind of gets more annoying.
I see that. Like, I can respect that, because like there are just certain films that you just can't watch more. Like, that you just can't laugh at
more than
once.
I mean, after you laugh at it for the first time, it's just like the more that you see it, it's just not funny anymore. but I understand. I mean, that's what it's made to be, a joke.
All right. All right. Fair enough. Jason.
I had grown up on this movie. I probably saw this much younger than I should have, considering how violent it is in a couple of scenes. But I remember enjoying it more the other times I had watched it. This time it kind of tapered off for me for some reason. I still enjoyed it, and I was still laughing at a few of the bits, but there is something about British humor that I think you have to be, like, you really have to be in the mood for it. Otherwise, it's just going to come off as annoying.
Yeah, no, I can understand that. And I feel like that was definitely kind of my thing about watching this film the first time, because my wife, when she went to college, she like that's where she got introduced to this. And like, I'd always kind of like heard about this film growing up, and like I recognized like a lot of the pop culture references that came from it. But when we were dating, you know, after the whole Batman extravaganza, she was like, I get to show you some of my movies now, right? And I was like,
we're back.
Yeah, let's do this. And so Mighty Python was actually one of the first films that she had shown me. She showed me that and Princess Bride. And Princess Bride, I love now. I hated Princess Bride first time I saw it.
Oh, really? You actually saw it and hated it?
I did. And like it really grew on me. Like, whereas like every time I would watch it, I would laugh a little bit more at something that I'd missed before. And now I watch it probably more than my wife does.
Yeah, it's that I could get not liking it, but that one is just like such a quality. I mean, is it redundant me saying that it's such a quality movie? I don't know at this point. Everybody kind of agrees it's pretty fantastic, but I get not liking it though still.
Yeah, and so like Mighty Python was like the second film that she showed me that she really loved, and I literally like just watched the entire film just dead faced the entire time. And I think the only time I actually laughed was the I fart in your general direction.
Okay, yeah. Yeah. I get it. There is a few parts, again, that just British humor is just so weird. Have you seen any other Monty Python stuff?
No.
I absolutely loved Monty Python and the Holy Grail, so I went to try and find some more of their stuff, because if I understand correctly, Monty Python is kind of like the Saturday Night Live of Britain. So they have a whole show that's just skit after skit after skit, and I hated it. I thought it was, I didn't laugh once, and it was like embarrassing to watch and uncomfortable, and it kind of made me appreciate Monty Python and the Holy Grail even more. I don't know what it was, but I mean, in all fairness, you don't hear people talking. When somebody says Monty Python, they always think the Holy Grail. They never think of, I think it's called the Flying Circus.
Yep.
I think is what it is. So I don't know. I guess everybody's popular opinion is Monty Python and the Holy Grail is where it's at for British humor, I guess.
Yeah, and so we're actually going to take a quick commercial break here in just a few minutes. But before we do that, when we get back from commercial break, just if you guys have never seen this before, this film's been out for almost 40 years, well, almost 50 years at this point. So, but we're still issuing a spoiler warning. But if you guys are listening to this right now and you or someone you know is struggling with suicide, addiction, self-harm, or depression, we encourage you guys to please reach out. Suicide is currently the 10th leading cause of death in the United States. There are 123 suicides that will take place each and every day. And when you scale back internationally, there are 800,000 successful suicides. That is one death roughly every 40 seconds. So if you or someone you know is struggling, you guys can go to victimsandvillains.net/hope, where you guys can find resources, including our social media, links to get connected to a therapist, the Suicide Lifeline, 1-800-273-8255, where you guys can also text anonymously to 741-741. But with that, we are going to be right back on the other side of this commercial break, talking more Mighty Python and the Holy Grail. All right, welcome back. And spoiler warning is now in effect. So if your mother's not a hamster, your father didn't smell like elderberries, you can hang around. It's cool. We'll let you into our club and into our Knights of the Round Table. But I don't even know. Like, this film has so much vastness in its, like, ridiculous nature and its irrelevance. I don't even know where to start on this film. but I think that, like, one of the things that I found myself appreciating this a little bit more about this film this time was that it doesn't, while it's not quite there as a, like, a humor with for my taste in humor, I feel like it as a film very much is experimental. And I feel like there's so much that you, even if you don't like this film or even love this film, that you still have to find yourself respecting this film, because it just takes so many different just jumps off of the high dive and just experiments in every way possible. And the genius way of kind of having this, like, modern day meets, like, you know, Renaissance age at the film's, like, end, and just end it that way with, you know, cops coming in and breaking up this what would have been a glorious battle, I think is just, it just really showcases the genius nature of this film.
Yeah, they really try, they really mess with your expectations throughout the entire movie. You can never tell what is going to happen at any moment, and like you just said, they end it on the same note that they've been playing the entire movie, is that, you know, you expected there to be some type of fantastic ending, and it just kind of ends with an arrest. You know, it's just like, wait, what? What have we been doing with our time? You know, and a lot of the, I mean, even in the very beginning, though, this kind of goes to my, I don't get a lot of British humor, but in the very beginning, the credits, it's like 5 minutes of credits and the whole thing is a joke. If you're reading the subtitles below it, it's like kind of pretending to go in German there for a little while. And then they're, you know, it's like, how did you even think of doing that? It was, even though I kind of laughed at the concept more than at the things that they were saying. They're talking about like a llama and a donkey at some point. I have no idea. It was all like nonsensical, but they really put a unique spin on comedy that you don't ever see. And I don't know if that's because we're American and that maybe that's more of something that you see in British humor that we just don't get to experience very much, but I don't know. But you can respect it for sure. I definitely agree with that.
Did you want to say anything, Aaron? I'm not trying to make this a dude conversation. Like, come on in, jump on in.
I know. I know. I was nervous doing this movie because I was afraid I wouldn't be able to say anything.
Oh no! All opinions are respected here.
I agree, though. It's, I mean, I don't necessarily get the humor every time, but and you can't expect what's going to happen for sure.
Yeah. And the one thing that I kind of kept on coming back to, that I was noticing while I was watching it this whole time, is the first somehow they still end up capturing like a gritty realism to like how it looks. Like it looks as though you would expect medieval, like the medieval era to look, while they're still like pretending to ride on horses. So there's like this strange contrast that is actually just funny. Like almost absolutely every scene in it is a joke. Like everything, there's never a single serious thing in the entire movie, but it still looks pretty good. At least I thought anyways, especially for the time, and learning how much, like how little budget they had for the movie is pretty incredible. So
I feel like when you're talking about like the look and the cinematography and the budget, you know, all joking aside, like I feel like this is a film that where you go back and you kind of watch a lot of other films. Like I previously mentioned, like I'm a big horror guy. So like one of my biggest influences when it comes to horror is Wes Craven. And he got his start in the 70s with, you know, The Last House on the Left and The Hills Have Eyes. And you go back and watch those movies now, and they're just, it doesn't look as crisp as this movie does. Like this film definitely has that gritty, like you're talking about, like it definitely feels grounded, and it looks just like it holds up. And regards to the way that like the picture quality has kind of translated throughout the years and throughout, like, you know, the VHS age and the laser disc age to, you know, now the streaming and Blu-ray age, like it really does hold up in its look and feel of the film. And I feel like there's, when you're talking about something like, you know, the Knights of the Round Table and King Arthur, I love there's just such a timeless aspect to that, you know, here we are almost 50 years later talking about a film that our parents grew up on, and
yeah,
still holds merit. And like, there's still things that you can joke about and laugh about. And it really does, like, you know, while you're talking about, like, before the break, saying, you know, how a lot of Mighty Python stuff, like, as a whole doesn't really hold up. But if you talk about Mighty Python, a lot of people are immediately going to, oh, you're talking about Holy Grail, because it's one of those films that is just become so iconic and just really translates so well over the course of all of these years and different generations.
Yeah, exactly. It's incredible how well it has held up. We were talking about the budget earlier, that kind of brought up a interesting fact. Like, the budget was so low for this movie that not only is the, you know, running around with coconuts supposed to be like a joke, but they also couldn't afford horses. So it was one part comedy, one part necessity.
Do you know if that was a planned thing then? They couldn't afford a horse?
That I do not know. I do not know if it was planned. I just know that they were constantly fighting with budget, which is impressive, because, like, I mean, I guess since you're in Europe, you have all these amazing set pieces that you can just take advantage of, for, you know, relatively short car ride or train ride, whatever, and get these actual real castles as your backdrops. And some of them aren't real, but but you have these amazing set pieces that are timeless, like you said. So it is actually really impressive.
So what is one moment that, as much as you guys see this film, because like we've talked about the timeless aspect of it, but also the genius aspect of it as well, what is kind of one thing that after all these years and after a couple of different viewings, like what is one thing that you guys just feel that you either appreciate or just really love about this film, that just kind of like moments that make you laugh?
You go first.
All right. I would say it has always been my favorite scene, but the fight between King Arthur and the Black Knight guarding the little pathway across the creek. That fight where he's just cutting off all of his limbs as he's going along. And that scene specifically is the one where I had seen, when I watched that as a child, was very disturbing to me. I do not remember
as it should have been.
Yeah. Especially the when King Arthur and his helper, whatever, his servant, roll up and they're watching the fight, and the black swordsman or the black knight, he throws his sword through the other guy's face, and it is gory and super surprising, because the whole movie's been so silly and cheesy up to this point that all of a sudden a guy gets a sword through the eye and blood is just pouring out and he's making horrible gargling noises. It just surprises me every single time.
So yeah, the violence is kind of unexpected.
Yeah, for sure. What about you?
So I have two scenes. I thought that the part, like you even quoted it, when the French guy is up in the castle and he's just like taunting them all. I mean, those scenes are just that's kind of like most of the humor for me, where I'm actually laughing. And then towards the end, when they come up to the bridge and the guy asks, you know, that old guy's asking them questions, and if they get it wrong, or I don't even understand if it's like a lie, yeah, or they get it wrong or whatever, they like fly into the off the cliff. And who is it? Lancelot?
Yeah, Lancelot. The first guy that goes up.
No, the main guy.
King Arthur. Yeah.
So King Arthur's, it's his turn, and he actually asks which kind of sparrow, and then that guy on the bridge is the one that flies off, and it was so not expected.
Yeah, it's perfect.
In all the years that he's been, you know, at the bridge, that's never happened. Just kind of funny.
And it really, like, that scene in particular, like, I was, like, actually thinking about that as you guys were talking. It really comes back to the genius of the film, because of that, there's a one scene in the very beginning of the film where he's introducing himself to the you know, the French guy on the bridge, like, on the castle. And, you know, he's talking about how, you know, they're talking about the differences in like swallows, and like it's just this completely irrelevant conversation that King Arthur is getting sucked into on this quest to find the whole, or at the time he's trying to bring together the Knights of the Round Table, and then it slowly transforms into the quest for the Holy Grail. But it's just, you just kind of see the genius in the writing, that here's this irrelevant moment in the beginning of the film that just randomly comes back. And that scene's, I love that scene, because like the guy's like face is like just completely like caught off guard. So like you're not expecting it, like you were talking about, like neither was he.
Right. I mean, the people that made this movie definitely had fun writing it.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, the dialogue is so like off the wall and unexpected, and constantly goes down just rabbit holes all the time. The dialogue is, it's always stupid, but it's always fun to listen to.
Yes. And I think that like one of my favorite things about this film is the way that it takes these kind of tropes that have been established in this genre for so long, and they're kind of giving these backstories to select members of the Knights of the Round Table. And there's one where I don't remember who it was, and I wish I would have wrote it down, but this guy is like, he's like the well-groomed guy, and he just goes through and he slays all of these people.
Right. It was Lancelot.
Okay. Yeah, like he goes through like slay all these people, and he finally gets up to the top of the castle, and he's expecting this princess, and it's a prince that just doesn't want to marry this woman.
Right.
And, The entire time that he's talking, he's like, well, come on, let's do it.
Right.
Constantly trying to break out into song. It's fantastic.
And it's like so like it's just these like so irrelevant themes that are just woven together. Like, I really, knowing now that a lot of what Mighty Python is kind of almost like the equivalent of what SNL is in America over there, it kind of almost, you can kind of get that feel that like they're telling a cohesive story, but there's these little skits that are kind of broken up within the middle.
Yeah, for sure. Like every single section of the movie, you could just cut out entire sections, and those will be just like skits of their own almost. And somehow they string them along throughout the whole thing and create a coherent storyline, question mark.
Well, I want to talk to you guys about like, that's kind of like the next point that I want to bring up, because like watching this now as a podcaster, like I watch films a little bit differently than I did, you know, before starting the show. And like, I don't know, like I really enjoyed like the main story arc with, you know, King Arthur and the Knights of the Round Table and the journey to unite the table and then to go and do the quest. But like just these like little aside moments of like trying to backstory and deepen a lot of these like very selective Knights of the Round Table members, like those kind of took me out of the film. Like they just kind of seemed to like be out of place, and some of them just felt really long, and it almost kind of felt like they didn't really know, they didn't have enough story when this thing came to film, and they were kind of like, oh, this is what we'll do. So like those were kind of like low moments in the film for me. But Jason, what did you think about that?
Yeah, I would agree. There is, I kind of felt that way really about a lot of the movie this time, is that it was kind of all meandering, and it, when it came down to it, you knew that the end storyline was going to be that they were going to try and get the Holy Grail. And they all felt like everything in it leading up to, even in the end, them not ever getting the Holy Grail, is that they were never able to find it. The entire movie was just the battle to find it with no real direction. Cause in the middle, I think I know where you're coming from. In the middle of the film, they go, the knights all like shoot off and go on their own separate little quests, looking for the Holy Grail. But in the end, they just kind of get back together again, like towards the last act, I guess you could say. And it all did just kind of feel like they were just walking around, not really doing much of anything. But I kind of have felt like that's kind of what the whole movie was, to be honest. So it's like, and it could be that I just wasn't in as much in the mood for like British comedy at the time, but it kind of felt like a lot more jumbled than I remember it being. But I, at least this time, I was just kind of, after you've seen it as many times as I have, you know that they're never going to get the Grail. So I was just kind of enjoying all of their meandering stories and just kind of reliving the memories of watching it as a kid. So
that's fair. Aaron?
I never, honestly, never really thought about it being like little, you said if you broke it up in little clips, like it would just be its own skit. And I think that's true. I don't really know if they even like meant to write it the way that it was in the movie, kind of like didn't know where it was going. Like when you were making the movie, did you know that they weren't going to find the Grail?
Or did you just decide?
Or did you just, kind of fly by the seat of your pants, make it up?
Just like every day, it's just kind of like, we're just going to rewrite. Oh, we're not feeling this page today. We're just going to do a new one.
Right.
So I know we have like British and UK listeners. So if you got offended by that, extremely, extremely sorry.
I'm not even going to try.
Aaron, you want to give a crack at it?
Oh, I'm the worst at accents. Okay. It's always the same.
Let's see if we can offend as many people as possible.
I mean, the show that, like, you know, is plugging hope and suicide prevention and ending depression. That seems like a really great outlet for that.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so we're moving on to the show, to the point in our show which we call Roads to Hope. And this is the point in our show where we engage with our guests of the week and we pull out either a theme of mental health or hope to that relates to this week's or this episode's specific content. And for this one, what we're doing is we're talking about the Black Knight. So the Black Knight there's a scene in this film where the Black Knight has a run-in with King Arthur. And the Black Knight is charged with his job to guard this like part of the forest. And King Arthur wants to essentially pass him. And he's like, well, in order to pass, you have to duel me. And so as these two are dueling one another, the Black Knight is just losing limb by limb. Like, he loses his arms first, keeps fighting. He loses his other arm, keeps fighting. Loses his leg, keeps fighting. Loses his other legs, keeps fighting. Even when he doesn't have a sword, a way of holding a sword or a weapon, he keeps fighting. And I think one of the most iconic things that has ever come out of this film is a line, "It's only a flesh wound." And King Arthur, of course, points out, says, "I just cut your arm off. You're literally bleeding." And he's like, "No, it's just a scratch." And I feel like this is a way that we really need to look at depression and thoughts of suicide. Is that no matter what life throws at us, it's just a season. It's just a scratch. It's just a flesh wound. Stay with us. Keep holding on, because every breath you take is valuable. Everything that life throws at your way, whether it feels like it is literally cutting your arms, your legs off, and you just don't feel like you have a way to fight it, stand strong. Because even when you can't see it, there's someone that's waiting in the wings for you that is willing to be on your side. And so with that, I kind of wanted to get your guys' thoughts on the value of this scene and then kind of looking at it from a way of holding on through tough times in life.
I hadn't ever thought about this scene in that way, but it really is you can make a strong message out of that scene, the never losing hope, no matter how grave your situation. You know, he's, like you said, he's being cut to pieces and still he's not even realizing the trouble that he's in, and he's just ready to keep on fighting. And it's surprising the people around him that, you know, they can see how bad his wounds are, and they're surprised at his ability to trudge through and make the best of it and still try and get on top and fight through. So that is a really powerful scene to actually bring up for that message. I like that a lot.
Yeah, I think that's an amazing way to look at it. Because life is hard, and you know, the Black Knight is, you know, he has his one job. That's his light at the end of the tunnel. That's what he's fighting for. And I don't know, even with all the struggles around, if you know, someone feels like they can't take it, everybody's got at least, you know, one thing to look towards to keep going and fighting for.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I love the way that, like, even as they pass him, he's still hurling insults at them. Like,
right.
Come back and face me.
You're the cowards.
Yeah. And we talked about this, you know, in our Death of Superman episode, where depression is this thief, and it's this liar and this manipulator, and it makes you see life in like you have no value or you have no worth and no one loves you, and like all these lies that just it likes to pile onto you. And when you stand up against it, it shrinks, and it's not quite so scary, and it's not quite so fearsome anymore. And a lot of ways, like, that's exactly the kind of way that we need to approach these things, is like, look, you might have to live with anxiety, you might have to live with depression, but people around you, they're going to pour into you, and they're going to be the ones that are going to help you learn to fight against these things, and to know that hope is something that you can hold on to even when it feels like you have nothing to hold on for. Just keep holding on. Stay with us. All right. Well, that is actually going to do it for us. So what is your favorite part of Mighty Python and the Holy Grail? Make sure that you guys tweet to us on Twitter at Victims and Villains, or you guys can also write to us at Victims and Villains or comment on this episode below. But where can people find out more about For Better or Worse?
You can reach us on Twitter at FBOWpod. And then we have a Facebook as well. And that's we're there at For Better or Worse. So reach out to us. Let us know what you think of our show. Let us know what you think of this show. And just reach out and, I don't know, let us know what you thought of Monty Python. I had a very, very different feelings about it this time going through, but still absolutely love the movie. So,
all right. So I'm actually going to be on their show talking about Pitch Black. So if you guys like Chronicles of Riddick, make sure that you guys tune in. We'll have links up on our website and on all of our social medias. And you guys can find us everywhere: Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, and iTunes. Make sure that you guys like, follow, and subscribe to us. And if you guys like what we stand for, make sure that you guys support us on Patreon. Go to patreon.com/victimsandvillains. Consider being a part of our Facebook group, Hope Culture, and sign up for our monthly newsletter. Not to mention, again, you guys can go to victimsandvillains.net/hope for resources if you guys are struggling with suicide, addiction, self-harm, or depression. And until next time, remember to keep talking, nerd, talking hope, and speaking nothing else.